Chin just released a report last month that said Iowa's in the top 5 for commercial property taxes. We're in the top 10 for industrial property taxes. You can't get to the top 10 in job creation in this country if you're in the top 10 in the property taxes. So I think that's the first place we have to start. I released a plan yesterday to the public over in Cedar Rapids that laid out 4 different points. The first point we need to address is we've got to stop the bleeding. Right now, Iowa's homeowners and our farmers are set to have a significant $500 million increase in our property tax system in the next 5 years. We've got to stop that by tying our classifications together. Second, Iowa needs to create a property tax relief fund that we put the first dollar in that comes in new revenue. And since I'm out of time, I hope they'll let me answer that later.
In my travels the last 6 to 8 weeks across Iowa and visiting specifically with individuals involved in various sizes of businesses, one thing is very clear. In order to be credible at the state level, you've got to get your own fiscal house in order. In order to be able to provide answers and solutions and some of the strategies that will be needed to help businesses grow once again, you've got to make sure that you're taking care of business in Des Moines and get the budget under control. I've found that people absolutely want to see Iowa affirm the status of right to work here in the state. That's significant to business as they plan for the future. Long-range planning means that they need to know that there's a good business environment in years to come. I also find that people are very concerned, if you're a smaller business, that state government provide the kind of resources to help, if nothing more, to find answers to some very basic questions on how to get things done, perhaps enter a new market, or how to promote the ideas, products, and services that they have to share with Iowans. So you need to have state government be responsive to those small, middle-sized companies that need those specialized resources.
Here again, Iowa needs a leader and someone who's been a CEO. As I travel the state and I visit with business owners, they're not looking for a pass. They're not saying, you know, Bob, don't have me pay taxes. But what they want is they want a competitive tax structure, a competitive regulatory structure, an environment where it's hospitable for business development, business growth. And this becomes very personal to me because I believe we export one of our most valued resources in the state, and it's called our students. We put a lot into them, and then they graduate the stages only to go to opportunities elsewhere. My oldest son's in New York City on an internship right now. Just got accepted to study at Oxford University. He's a bright kid, takes after his mom. More than likely, he's going to go to New York or to Minneapolis or some other place. But he says, when I start to raise a family, Dad, I want to come home. I want to come back to Iowa. In order for him to come back to Iowa, we need leadership that produces or creates an environment where businesses can develop, thrive, and succeed in Iowa.
Senator Bean.
Thank you. The first thing we need, I believe, is a governor who will provide a firewall against incredibly poor legislation. If you've ever watched kids building a sandcastle on a beach, you know it takes them hours to build it, and it takes a few seconds for a wave to come in and destroy that. Job creation is like that. If you put out a rumor, even a thought, a talk, that you're going to get rid of the right to work, for example, you throw a chill across the entire economic sector of this state. We need a governor who will be willing to say no to the job killers and willing to say yes to the good legislation. And when that legislation is in there, he can say very honestly, businesses, you're free to come to Iowa. You don't have to worry about those going away. We've worked on a job creation environment before. We can do it again, but we have to prevent the bad stuff.
Great. Well, let's talk about the state budget. Some estimates indicate that we did not end fiscal year 2009 in the black and that we're heading into next year with a $1 billion budget gap. We've already seen some state layoffs. The Department of Agriculture has proposed that its 400 employees reduce their work hours by 4 hours every pay period. Gentlemen, if you were governor, what specific things would you do to cut the budget and find cost savings? Representative Rentz?
Well, we start out the year, we are $160 million short in this existing budget year. That is why we ought to have a special session this summer or this fall to get the budget healthy again. If I was governor today, the first thing that I would do after bringing the legislature back into a special session is call the legislative leaders to the table and also ask me. The fact is that Iowa taxpayers can't afford the level of growth that we see in the public sector right now. We have a 28% disparity between private sector jobs and public sector jobs. And public sector jobs today, the AFSCME contract, is the fastest growing part of our state budget. If we want to avoid layoffs in areas that we really care about, like corrections and public safety, we have to reopen and re-examine that contract. Is that difficult? Yes. But that's what the governor is supposed to do, is to tackle some of those difficult issues. The next thing, we start looking at the details of the budget. And if it's simple stuff, like not buying $11 million worth of new cars, or looking at $25 million of office supplies, as Representative Racker pointed out, those are the kinds of things that we have to go in and wholesale eliminate.
There's no question, but we've arrived at a place here in Iowa with our state budget where spending has grown at a pace that was unsustainable even in the best of economic times. Now the perfect storm of the effect of a national recession has come to Iowa, and we've got to make some very serious decisions about spending priorities. This past legislative session, House Republicans went through budget after budget, line by line, finding specific areas where we could reduce spending and save the taxpayers money. There were estimates of $250 to $300 million in cost savings. Those are the kinds of things we should be doing now. And as we anticipate the future, I think once in a generation, there's an opportunity where you can actually seriously go into state government and think about reorganizing and streamlining departments and agencies. And we're on the verge of that. So in order to remedy the problem and have a long-lasting solution, we're also going to have to address the size of government, the structure of government, and how to go through a process of reorganizing.
Just prior to the end of this fiscal year, our campaign called on Governor Culver and said, you are going to be well short of closing the books. Now, I used to teach accounting. My wife was a CPA. We're both Dutch. Money's very important to us. We said, you're going to be well short of closing the books at the end of the fiscal year. And he said that we were in fantasy land. And then he said we were trying to create a fear epidemic with Iowa's people. And then he said that he wanted to hope and wait. And we said hope and wait is not a strategy. You need to address this issue. But as your next governor, this is what I can tell you. Number one is we are going to stop paying for ongoing expenses with one-time resources. Number two is we're going to bring in department heads who are cutting edge, who understand lean processing, how to get results with excellence, but under economic integrity. The private sector, all they're focused on today is how can I produce more with less? Government seems to be on this train of how do I produce less, but with a lot more.
Well, the first thing I want to point out to everybody in the crowd today is it's not your fault. Contrary to what everybody's been telling you, that we're short of revenue, we are close to record revenue. Now, it's not record, I'll grant that, but it's close to record. When the governor took over, it was about $5.4 billion. This year's budget will be about $6.1 billion. That's $700 million in growth. That's simply unsustainable. I would remind you that with the Titanic, at any one given time for the Titanic, it really wasn't where it was that was the problem. It was where it was headed. And the first thing we need to do is change direction. The governor needs to call a special session. We need to address the issue now. State budget takes up where we leave off. If we don't take care of part of the problem right now, it's going to be worse next year. So I would just leave you that we need to work on it. We need to work on it now.
You know, state government is putting a burden on Iowa's families, a burden of generational debt, of taxes, of spending beyond what Iowa's families should have to bear. This has happened not just this year, but in the past, we've had governors and legislators that have chronically passed budgets that have not been in strict compliance with the 99% spending limit. As governor, I would promise Iowa a balanced budget. In my first year, I would cut spending by 5%, a 5% smaller budget compared to Governor Culver's last budget. We would have a budget that was in strict compliance with the 99% spending limits. I would stop the taxpayer funding of government lobbyists that simply come back to the legislature and ask for more of taxpayers' dollars. It's a cycle that has to stop. By making tough choices, by restoring the money back to the citizens of Iowa, we can restore an Iowa, a government in Iowa that reflects the values of its citizens.
Thank you. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. I'd like to talk about the state smoking ban. The state smoking ban has been in effect for a little over a year now. It was approved and signed into law by a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor. Would any of you work to repeal that law if you were governor? And if not, what changes would you make? Representative Roberts.
Thank you. That was a very significant and spirited debate. I know in the Iowa House, I'm sure it was in the Iowa Senate, and it was significant public policy. There was certainly a great deal of public interest in that, and the legislation was passed. It was signed into law, and I've spoken with constituents back home, some who were not happy, who were upset with the public policy that was enacted. But as a matter of fact, it is now, in my opinion, it is settled. And I would not, at this point in time, as we have this forum this afternoon, see any reason to repeal that. And as spirited as the debate was and as heated as the points of view were on that, that matter has been settled. And it's very difficult to undo public policy like that, as significant as that public smoking ban legislation was.
Well, first of all, I want to let everybody know I do not smoke. However, I'm a big fan of private property rights. And it comes down to how important is your freedom to you. Now, the first change I would make is if we're going to leave it to where the private establishments have to be smoke-free because it's such a public health risk, then I guarantee you what, I will not exempt the casinos. The casinos will be in as well. But two is I think this goes more to a freedom issue, a private property issue, and a marketplace issue. John Locke was right when he said our very freedom is found in the ownership of property. And it's up to you and me if we frequent a place where smoking is allowed or not allowed. Right now, I believe smoking is still a legal substance. I think if we're going to be a party that talks about freedom, we need to represent freedom. And I think private property is at the core of our freedom.
Thank you. I voted no on a smoking ban, and I voted against it for one simple reason. The people that owned the establishments already had the power to ban smoking if they wanted to. It simply was inappropriate for government to step in. I'm reminded of the founders who told us that a government strong enough to give you everything you want is a government strong enough to take everything you have. When private property owners already had the authority to herd smokers in a corner if they wanted to, ban them entirely, or let them roam freely about their premises, we had no business intervening. Once we did intervene, at the very latest, or very least, it should have been uniform statewide. To exempt the casinos is an out-and-out, I don't think that's even constitutional. It's supposed to apply evenly to people across the board. I don't think that was appropriate in any way, shape, or form.
So would you work to repeal it?
Well, the governor can ask for things, but that's up to the legislature. And we're not gonna get to be king. We're gonna be governors, and a governor can ask for things, but the legislature has to bring those bills to the governor. That's why I wanted to say before I'd be a firewall against bad legislation. A governor really can't create a lot of new legislation.
Yeah, this is a perfect example of why the legislative process is so broken and why the processes in Des Moines are so broken. To have a law passed that prohibits an activity in a private establishment, but then carves out and allows it in a casino, presumably because the state itself is so addicted to casino revenues that it feels compelled to find those increasing. It's broken law. It should not have been passed. Now, we're dealing with a very difficult situation where we have to discover what the priorities are. I think the priorities of the next governor has to be to restore fiscal sanity within state government. It has to be to reflect the will of the people on a constitutional amendment on marriage, giving them the right to vote for it. Overturning a smoking ban would not be something that I would prioritize.
I voted against the legislation, but a governor does only have so much political capital to spend. I would choose to spend my political capital on reducing Iowa's property tax burden, raising standards for our students, trying to create a better business climate so we put the 100,000 Iowans out of work back into gainful employment. That's how I would choose to spend my political capital.
Great. Well, let's talk about marriage. As you know, the Iowa Supreme Court's April decision in Barnum versus Bryan legalized same-sex marriage in Iowa. Mr. Vanderplaats has said that he would issue an executive order to put a stay on the decision, but Governor Culver has said that governors simply don't have the authority to do that because of the judicial branch is a co-equal branch of government. Gentlemen, if elected governor, what action would you take on the marriage issue?
This one's for me. I'm surprised I got this one. First of all, Governor Culver used to teach government. I was a high school principal that evaluated government teachers. And I would tell you under Article 4, Section 1 of the Iowa Constitution, Governor Culver definitely has the ability to issue an executive order. And what I've told people all across the state, I will issue an executive order on day one that puts a stay on same-sex marriages until the people of Iowa have a right to vote on that issue. Now, this transcends marriage, though. This goes right back to freedom. The Supreme Court did things that they cannot do. They're driving a car without a license. They legislated from the bench, they executed from the bench, and they attempted to amend the Constitution from the bench. They can't do those things. If we allow them to do this with marriage, all of a sudden private property is up for grabs, free enterprise is up for grabs, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly like this is up for grabs. This is what the framers were concerned about, that we'd have tyranny, not liberty. I'll issue the executive order on day one.
Thank you. Well, first off, I would encourage you all to read your Iowa Constitution. You'll find that the branches are not co-equal, and the words co-equal are not in there. So the very idea that the courts have usurped their authority means that we need to do something about it. Frankly, an executive order appears to me to be a little bit of a Band-Aid. If we have Supreme Court justices who are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, we have in Iowa the ability to not retain them. And I would encourage you to take this advantage or take an advantage of an opportunity that you have. If those justices are so intent on legislating from the bench, my comment would be, you all have a chance to let them. Don't retain them. Let them run for the legislature. They can legislate any way they jolly well please. But in the meantime, we need justices who will uphold the Constitution, not rewrite it. I think an executive order would be something to explore. But if it gets overturned by the courts, you're back in square one again. I think that's a Band-Aid.
As governor, I would support giving Iowans the opportunity to vote on a constitutional amendment defining marriage as between one man and one woman. That's a constitutional amendment that I would personally support. As governor, in regards to an executive order, as governor, I would do everything in my power to restore traditional marriage, but only the things that were enforceable.
My record on the issue of marriage is pretty clear. When I was majority leader, that's when the House of Representatives passed the Defense of Marriage Act. When I was Speaker of the House, we passed the constitutional amendment through the House, didn't make it all the way through the Senate. And last year, when the Supreme Court ruling came down, the ball got thrown in my hands to try to come up with a way to force a vote on the floor. We did that successfully. Successfully forced the vote on the floor. Unfortunately, we didn't have 51 votes on the floor. I support traditional marriage. I'll continue to support that. I disagree with Mr. Vanderplaats. I don't think the Constitution affords the governor the ability to stay a Supreme Court ruling with an executive order. But the governor does have the ability to force legislative leaders to the table. Something I've discovered during my tenure is when you get into negotiations, the governor has a say at that negotiating table as well. And as governor, I would use that say at that negotiating table to get legislators to put it on the ballot. I will also say that I haven't given up on the fact that we may debate it and pass it this coming year. The legislature still has an opportunity to act come January.
I'm certainly a strong proponent of traditional marriage, and it's very clear to me that this matter has now gone beyond what individuals may think is the appropriate answer to the question to a matter of respect for the people of Iowa. People in Iowa would like to weigh in on this question. And when you have two branches of government, the legislative and executive branch, in agreement, but now in disagreement with the third branch, the judiciary, on a subject as important as the definition of marriage, the proper thing to do and the immediate thing that should have been done was to go to the people for an answer. It is their authority that will matter in deciding the answer to this question. Article 1, Section 2 of our state constitution says that all political power in Iowa is inherent within the people. I would support, and as Representative Rant said, as governor, would make certain, if it doesn't happen next year during session, that Iowans have an opportunity to vote on that resolution to amend their state constitution, Secondly, next year, all of us on the ballot are accountable. So are three of the Supreme Court justices. They are accountable. And people can express themselves via the ballot on what they think of their justices' performance.
Thank you. I'd like to talk a minute about gambling. Last week, the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission agreed to accept applications for new casino licenses. At that meeting, Debbie Durham, president of the Siouxland Chamber of Commerce, proposed reducing state taxes on existing casinos that would be negatively affected by the new ones. What do you think of that specific idea, and do you think it's time for the legislature and the governor to re-enter the gambling debate? Senator Bain.
Well, frankly, I think we're already addicted enough to gambling, and I'm not in favor of any additional gambling. So specifically on that issue, I'm not familiar with it, but I would look at it, but I'm not inclined to be in favor of entering that debate again. If anything, I'd like to see it reduced.
I think we have enough casinos in Iowa. I certainly would love to explore any way we can lower taxes, not just on casinos. I would like to lower taxes on all Iowans, on all Iowa businesses, on all Iowa families.
I'm not convinced that the Racing Gaming Commission will offer new licenses, given the fact that I think there will be cannibalizing of the existing markets. I don't think we ought to be lowering taxes on casinos, though. I think there are plenty of other places, if we're going to reduce taxes, that we ought to focus, be it on small businesses, be it on families. I'm not sure the casino industry is the one that needs the tax break. That said, I would hope Governor Culver is not using this as an opportunity or trying to create an environment to bet on the future, better budget on the future of more gambling in Iowa. I've seen that in the past, where he and other Democrats will say, if we offer more casinos, we can spend more money. We can make this promise for the future. I think we ought to resist that temptation to increase our state budget or to balance the billion-dollar shortfall that we have today on the belief that just one or two more casinos will provide us the answer and avoid having to make those difficult questions. We need to resist that. But I also don't think the casino industry is the one that needs tax breaks in Iowa.
It's obvious that the people of Iowa at this point in time are accepting of legalized gambling, including the casinos that we have in place. And it's the state's responsibility, as long as the people are accepting of legalized gambling, that we administer and regulate gambling in the state. And we have a commission that is charged with the responsibilities of making decisions about licenses. I wonder as well whether or not, in fact, as you look at the landscape here in Iowa, another licensed casino would be wise given the economic conditions we're in. And I certainly would not agree that that is the course of action that we should take in terms of raising revenue for the state's budget problems. I don't think we should lower taxes on the casinos.
As governor and as a CEO, I'd like to lead our budgetary process where we decrease our dependency on gambling. I'm now in no way in favor of the expansion of gambling, nor am I in favor of lowering the taxes on existing casinos. But two is I want to go back to an issue we talked about the last question. Article 4, Section 9 of the Iowa Constitution says the governor will see that all laws are faithfully executed in the state of Iowa, all laws. And when that means that one of the branches of government does something that's outside of their jurisdiction, the governor has a responsibility to bring that branch back in check. That's why Iowans are looking for leadership on this issue. It goes way beyond the ability, do I get a right to vote? That might happen in 2012 or 2014. A governor needs to bring this branch back into check and let the legislative process work, or let the amendment process work with a vote for the people.
Thank you. Well, we are doing well on time, and so I'm going to turn to some audience questions now. And this question starts with Mr. Fong. Do you support or oppose reinstatement of capital punishment in Iowa?
I would support capital punishment in Iowa for the sort of crimes that are allowed under federal definitions of when capital punishment is allowed. And that's for the most heinous first-degree murders coupled with other violent crimes.
My voting record is one of supporting capital punishment. That's never an easy vote to cast. when you sit in the legislature and we had that debate, 3 days of debate, and you realize that when you cast that vote, someone will eventually pay the ultimate price if it's signed into law. I cast that vote. I supported capital punishment. I would do so again today. I would add some caveats to the law that we attempted to pass several years ago. I believe that DNA testing, which is today's modern fingerprint, if you will, is important to link the accused, the felon, with the actual crime. So at the time that we passed the law, it was two capital offenses. I would add the additional caveat that DNA testing ought to be used as well.
No, I would not support the reinstatement of the death penalty here in Iowa. In Iowa, we have life in prison without chance of parole for first-degree murder. I've been to Fort Madison, toured the penitentiary there, and Fort Madison, if you're convicted and you're sentenced to Fort Madison, that is not a pleasant place to be. Life in prison without chance of parole is a serious punishment. And several years ago in the state of Illinois, there was obviously a problem that had developed so serious that the governor at that time had to issue a moratorium, staying executions, because it became obvious that there had been innocent individuals probably put to death. And as much as we might want to put faith in science and specifically forensics today, that's no guarantee that you wouldn't execute an innocent individual. Life in prison without chance of parole is a just punishment for murder.
I would support the reinstatement of capital punishment in Iowa. And with full understanding that I can't imagine a tougher decision as a governor. And I'd want to make sure that it's 100% certain that the accused and the person who's found guilty is actually the person. But I'm still reminded of a case here in Iowa of just set a gauge. And for those of us who've invested a lot of our times in the lives of kids, to have somebody where it was obviously premeditated and obviously a heinous crime, and then to kill her so that the evidence would be covered up. I think there are some crimes that are so heinous, the only rightful response is capital punishment.
Senator Bain.
Thank you. Well, I definitely would support the reinstatement of capital punishment. And there's anecdotal evidence, you know, people will say, well, it doesn't deter crime. My comment is, A, it deters repeaters. But the second thing it does, and you can ask some of the guards that were captured by some criminals when they escaped, they were in a state that had capital punishment, and one of the guards was told by the inmates that they weren't going to kill them there because that state had capital punishment. Now, I can rest assured those guards were happy that state had that. Also, in Iowa right now, if you kidnap a child, you get life in prison. If you rape a child, you get life in prison. If you murder a child, you get life in prison. Very frankly, there is an incentive for a criminal to go ahead and murder their victim, so there's no reason or there's nobody that can testify against them. I would definitely support reinstatement of capital punishment.
Thank you. Another question from our audience. This is about medical marijuana. Senator Joe Bolcom of Iowa City has introduced Senate File 293, a bill that would allow the medical use of marijuana in Iowa. What's your position on this issue, Representative Brent?
I don't support that.
Another brief response to that question. At this point in time, I see no evidence that would convince me to support that as public policy.
Me too, and I promise I won't use the balance of my time to talk about the executive order and why it makes sense.
I would also be opposed to medical marijuana. Some of the latest research shows that the new marijuana is up to 5 times stronger than the old stuff that I think some of us older people in the crowd have memories of that used to think it was a fun thing or a no, not me. I'm just telling you what I heard. All right, but anyway, no, I would definitely not be in favor of allowing medical use.
You know, I know in medicine people find themselves in difficult situations, and yet I am opposed to the use of medical marijuana. I am in favor of asking medical researchers to find new ways to treat pain and to deal compassionately with people in those situations.
Great. Okay. One of your fellow Republicans want to know, Should Governor Branstad join the Republican primary field? Why or why not? Representative Roberts.
The first thing I'm going to say is that I have a great deal of respect and admiration for Governor Branstad, as I do Governor Ray, who is with us this afternoon. And I think these are two fine public servants who served Iowans very well during their terms in office. I look at a field of candidates. You have five up here this afternoon. There's a sixth one who sent his regrets, the possibility of a seventh and perhaps more. I think a full field of candidates provides for a spirited primary and an opportunity for Iowans to hear a variety of points of view and perspectives on issues. So if Governor Branstad wants to enter the primary field of candidates and join us up here at the table, he's more than welcome.
Obviously, I don't make other people's decisions. What I can tell you is that my name will be on the ballot June 8, 2010. And so I plan on traveling across Iowa and talking about a vision for Iowa. How do we maximize our potential right here in the state of Iowa? We live in the greatest country in the world. And it's my opinion we live in the greatest state in this country. How do we create a vibrant economy that keeps our youth here and keeps our people who retire here? How do we create an Iowa that sets the international standard in education versus responding to the international standard? How do we lead with health insurance that's tied to the individual personal responsibility and personal care, preventive care versus reactive care? How do we provide human services with a hand up versus a handout? How do we become a leader with energy independence while being environmentally friendly? We need to be talking about leadership today, regardless of who's in the race.
Well, I'm tempted to use my time to go off to, but I'm gonna just stick to the question and say that very frankly, that's up to Governor Branstad. I agree with Rod. A spirited debate, a spirited primary is good for everybody because bottom line is the state is headed in the wrong direction. Bottom line is this race is against Governor Culver, and whichever one of us gentlemen it is, I think we'll all be better off with any of us.
Governor Branstad, I would invite you to make your decision very soon. This race is about looking forward. It's about a vision for Iowa. My vision is to restore what is great in Iowa, the restoration of the Iowa dream, restoration of a government that reflects the values of its people, restoration of sound and sane fiscal policy. Restoration of getting back to the 99% spending limits that have been consistently violated in past governors' administrations, past legislatures. Whichever candidate is selected to be the Republican candidate has to be committed to those values and pushing them forward. The restoration of an Iowa that we can believe in is something that I'm offering.
This gubernatorial primary gives our party a chance to talk about the future, not just of the state, but also of the Republican Party of Iowa, because the governor is, as we've learned, both through having it and losing it, sets the agenda for the party, is the spokesperson for the party, and helps chart the future for our party and how we run and win elections. And we've suffered for not having a governor in the past several years. It's about the future. It's not about the past. And I think this gubernatorial primary is about charting the future of the state and articulating what a Republican vision is, be it any of our visions or Terry Branstad's vision, for what the future of Iowa is about. If Terry Branstad wants to join the primary, I would echo it. Jump on in, but do it soon. There's a lot of these kind of forums going on, and you don't want to miss that opportunity to ask those questions or shake those hands. There's something, we're all learning, there's something going on in every one of our 99 counties every single night. It's a big state, and it takes a lot of time to crisscross it. So if he wants to come in fine, but let's start talking about the future of the state.
This is also from our audience. We talked a little bit about how we would cut the state budget and also about how maybe the state smoking ban is maybe not one of your top priorities. But what are your budget priorities given that revenues will remain challenged? Mr. Vanderplas.
I think what presents itself to us right now is a great opportunity for Iowa. Matter of fact, when Governor Jindal was here and I toured Cedar Rapids with him last year, I said to Governor Jindal, you know, I'd really like to take over the governorship of Iowa. We have about a $500 million deficit. well, it looks like we're going to have about $1 billion deficit. And the reason I said that is then there's an urgency to change. There's an urgency for reform. I believe what we've done is we've grown a bureaucracy, we've grown government, but we haven't produced results. We haven't produced results in education. We haven't produced results in human services. We haven't produced results in a business climate. I believe there's an urgency for change today. I think it's a great opportunity to reform government and the way it's delivered, and not expecting less of government, but expecting more of government, but under the umbrella of economic integrity.
Thank you. Well, one of the things we did in the past, and I don't want to look back, but I think sometimes we can learn from history, we lowered the size of government when Republicans were in control of the legislature. That's one of the things we can and need to do again. Under this administration, there's been approximately 1,500 full-time equivalent positions added to state government. That costs hundreds of millions of dollars. It's simply unsustainable. And we have to look at delivery services. And I would also echo that in every crisis, there is an opportunity. And when a situation like this presents itself, it doesn't come up very often, thankfully, but it gives us an opportunity to really look at the efficiency and duplication of government, and that's what we can do.
You know, government has grown by something like 20% over Governor Culver's administration. And the problem as we grow bureaucracy and grow government and use that as a misguided solution to the problems of Iowa is we create a government that's not just big, but it's a government that's bad. Big and bad government has to stop. My priorities would be to have a balanced budget in year one, to cut spending by 5% in year one, to return to 99% spending limit in year one and every year of my administration. Now, how do we get there? By combining back office, by combining IT, we'd save $20 million. We would have smarter, smaller government. By outsourcing the leasing or the vehicle fleet of state government, we would save something like $18 million a year. Again, smarter, smaller government. By taking consistent steps to make it smarter and smaller, we'll get back to a government that spends within its means.
Lynn, I'm sorry, I'm going to ask you to repeat the question again. Is it about priorities we would protect?
Yes. What are your budget priorities, okay, given that revenues will remain challenged?
Cuts are coming. Cuts have to come. The priority, my number one priority for what I would protect is a relationship with the property taxpayer. What's going on in state government right now, what I predict Governor Culver will do as we enter the next budget year, is to shift the burden, to shift the cost of operating state government onto property taxes. He has done that three times in the last year, where he's taken programs that state government could no longer afford and sent it back to the property taxpayer through the use of additional levies. His decision, Governor Culver's decision, to cut school aid he just cut the state portion without actually reducing allowable growth, shifted the cost of operating your school districts more onto the back of the property taxpayer. That's the wrong direction. We ought to be moving the other way. So my number one budget priority for who I'm going to protect is protecting the Iowa property taxpayer.
Each time I've run for elective office, I promised my constituents two very simple leadership commitments. Number one, I'll show up for work and work hard on your behalf. And number two, I will be as careful with your money as I am with my own. And I am very careful with my money. When we look at the state's budget right now, it's inexcusable that spending has gone on at a rate where now we're looking at a budget gap of $1 billion. And friends, I would never wish this on any generation of Iowans. The decisions that are going to be made, the difficult choices that will be made, will be felt. But the key priority areas that I would make sure that we fund would be areas that I think Iowans expect of state government: public safety, law enforcement, good infrastructure so that we have what we need for transportation, for our economy, good schools, and a clean environment. Those are four key areas that I think Iowans prioritize, that I would prioritize as governor.
Great. Well, this question is for my friend on the far side of the room. There was an effort to repeal federal deductibility this past session. Would it be fair to say that you all would oppose such an effort? Are we on Senator Bank?
Well, yeah. Yes, I absolutely would oppose the repeal of federal deductibility. And that's one of those job killers that I referred to early on that the governor needs to stand up for, not only to maintain the right to work, but maintain federal deductibility. We, even when we talk about things like that, it sends a chill across businesses and people across the state. So I would absolutely protect federal deductibility.
I would also protect federal deductibility. A tax on a tax is simply unfair for Iowans.
I oppose it. I oppose any effort to raise the income tax in the state. It's a job killer. I come from a very hyper-competitive environment over in Sioux City. It's the same environment, though, that you find on the east coast of the state. Income taxes make a difference. People choose where they want to work, where they want to live, where they want to put businesses, and they do it in large part based on the income tax rate. I'm not sure that Governor Culver truly understands that. One of the reasons I got into this race was when Governor Culver changed his position on raising taxes to balance Iowa's budget. That to me was a wake-up call, that he was intent on taking a course of action that hurts my community and hurts this state and will chase people and will chase jobs across our two rivers. So I would oppose those kinds of efforts, and I'd be looking for ways that we actually reduce that tax burden.
I would oppose elimination of federal deductibility from the Iowa tax code. It's very clear this past year the attempt to do that was done so that revenue could be increased for state government, and Iowans caught on to that very quickly. And so I think the majority of Iowans also agree that we need to protect and keep federal deductibility, and I would make that commitment as governor.
You know, even the thought of repealing federal deductibility is more than repealing federal deductibility. It's part of a disturbing trend. It's everything we can do to drive productivity and business out of the state, whether it's repealing Iowa's a right-to-work state, whether it's opening up Chapter 20, whether it's fair share, whether it's card check, whether it's all those types of things. So I believe the first thing we need to do is we need to get after reforming government, but then everything we can do to keep an eye on keeping that tax climate competitive, the regulatory climate competitive, so business and industry can develop and thrive in Iowa. It's not rocket science, but we need to know what the priorities are, and I think the priorities are we want a vibrant economy because the ripple effect of a vibrant economy is dynamic. Good schools, good human services, good amenities.
Thank you. One of our audience members would like you to talk about campaign finance. What is your position on campaign contribution limits to reduce the impact of large special interest campaign contributions? Mr. Funk.
The campaigns have grown incredibly expensive. The number, $1 million that any of us are going to have to raise to run a primary has been bandied about, maybe $10 million for this entire campaign. It's very expensive. However, introducing additional rules and regulations is not in the best interest of Iowans, and what we have in place now is something that could continue in a way that's fair for Iowans and make sure that everyone has access to the system, access to meet the candidates, access to shake their hand and ask where they are on the issues. That's something that should continue.
I haven't favored in the past arbitrary limits based on campaign contributions, particularly for candidates. We all as candidates go out, ask people for support. We'll spend our money on billboards, yard signs, television commercials, whatever it might be, to convince Iowans to vote for us. It ought to be about the candidates asking for support and the candidates delivering their message to the Iowa voters to finally render a judgment on. My concern always is when you talk about limiting campaign contributions to candidates is you create the opportunity for special interest groups to actually step in and fill the void. That special interest groups, who are accountable to no one, aren't answerable at the ballot box or answerable at that central committee meeting or on that main street when you shake someone's hand, they're the ones that suddenly set the agenda. They're the ones who fill those television airwaves with the ads that you may or may not like. I think it's more important, I think it's a better system when it's the candidates that raise the money and spend the money.
As a candidate, I personally do not support limitations on personal contributions. However, I will say that serving for a number of years on the state government committee within the Iowa House of Representatives, where we frequently visit issues like campaign financing, does cause me to give serious thought to an open, I think, and frank discussion about the direction that money has taken in political campaigns. In some respects, this has fueled a great deal of cynicism among the public that the only people who can participate are those who can raise large sums of money. And so I will share with you this afternoon that I do think that that is a very fair and legitimate subject that should be discussed further. And I think Iowans are very interested in knowing just where does this all go and where does it lead us if we don't perhaps have a more serious discussion about campaign financing in Iowa.
I just want to know, where did Barack's money all come from? Well, to that end, I agree with these guys that raising money is a part of this campaign. And candidates go out and they work hard for it, and asking people for money isn't always the most pleasant thing to do, but it's a necessary thing to do. I think what we want to ensure here in Iowa that we have an open, we have an accountable, and we have a transparent system so that our elections are honest, and that we know where is the money coming from. To that end, if we felt the need where there should be campaign finance reform, I'd be very open to participating in that discussion.
Campaign finance is one of those things that looks good, sounds good, smells good, but nobody knows how to do it. The real question is, who sets the limits? Are they going to be arbitrary? Where are they going to be? How are they going to be enforced? And reality is, it turns out to be an incumbent protection plan. If you limit the incumbent to the same amount of money as a challenger, the incumbent has an advantage. So what are we going to say? Well, we'll give two times to the challenger. What? About three? What about four? I mean, again, it sounds good, and everybody would like to get the money out of politics, but there's no real easy way of doing it, and frankly, I don't see a fair way to do it. And, you know, everybody in the crowd can say, well, it's easy for you guys to say. You're on the asking end of this thing. Of course you wouldn't want to limit it. But reality is, there's no fair way to do it. And frankly, I don't think that's constitutional either.
Well, this will probably be my final question. Tonight, President Obama will address the nation on health care reform. Here in Iowa, the state has expanded children's health insurance to, I believe, 99% of children, those up to 300% of the federal poverty limit. Senator Jack Hatch has talked about next year expanding insurance to uninsured adults. And Governor Culver has talked about expanding health insurance for mental health coverage. Is this the right direction for Iowa's move in terms of health care reform? I think we're on Representative Rentz. Right?
Which of us? Me?
Are we on Representative Rentz?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm losing track about which one this is supposed to start yet. Sorry about that. I think there are two choices to make. One, you can include more people in health care. That is an avenue that Senator Hatch and Governor Culver are looking at. There's another avenue, though, that looks at quality and accessibility. I think we're reaching a crisis stage with Iowa's hospitals right now, where Iowa hospitals that aren't fully reimbursed for the services that the state expects them to provide are operating at a loss. I believe that's where we ought to put our focus if we're going to ensure accessibility and, most importantly, quality. Because whether you're on the state program, whether you have private insurance or private pay, you want to make sure when you go to that hospital, you've got a quality system and quality doctors that you're dealing with. I think the state ought to explore how we develop a system that rewards quality, where you rank your hospitals, you assess them and you rank them, and the hospitals that provide your premium quality care get 100% Medicaid reimbursement. Those hospitals that don't get a portion less down to a set minimum. But we need to develop a system that encourages and rewards quality, and the state needs to fund it fairly.
Iowa has a tradition of taking care of those who are in need, and certainly children have been a priority in terms of health insurance coverage for some time now within the legislature, and Iowa's doing a good job extending that coverage to children. My concern with regard to health care here in Iowa is that the system of delivery that we have hospitals and healthcare providers, professionals, who are reaching a point where it's becoming extremely difficult for them to actually provide the medical services that Iowans are needing. And before we get much further down the road with opening enrollment and increasing numbers within new programs, we need to look very carefully at the structure we have and making sure that we're providing the resources necessary for hospitals and our health care providers.
I joined governors from across the country in a lot of fear and trepidation what Barack Obama's plan is going to do to the state budget. And if they plan on that, we're just going to pass on a lot of liability to states, it's going to break the Medicaid bank. And I think in Iowa, we have been unfairly penalized in our reimbursement system for a long time. We deliver one of the best quality of health care anywhere in the country, yet we get reimbursed the worst. I believe there needs to be an incentive program where those states, and I believe Iowa should lead the way here, of access to quality health care that's affordable. And because we've been unfairly penalized, let us be part of the solution instead of the problem. I'd also like to reemphasize to put an emphasis on preventative health care, not reactionary health care. Prevent something before it becomes catastrophic and high cost.
Thank you. Well, states are laboratories for different options and different delivery systems, and I think that's one of the things that having 50 states and 50 different options provide. But one of the things I want to remind everybody in the room is that the legislature started out at 150% of poverty to take care of children who were in dire straits. And instead of targeting those 150% of poverty-level children and being sure that all of those were exposed to this system, the legislature did what the legislature does. They expanded the universe. They didn't cover more of the children that needed it. They just covered more children and then tried to break their arms, pat themselves on the back for all the kids they covered. That was not the concept behind the legislation. Yours and my tax dollars should not subsidize everybody else. Very frankly, I want to remind you what Abraham Lincoln said. He said, "You cannot help people permanently by doing for them what they can and should do for themselves."
I grew up as the son of an immigrant and in a family that didn't have a lot. I was on programs that helped kids in those situations, on free and reduced lunch programs. I am absolutely in favor of protecting kids that are in struggling families and making sure that our most vulnerable people continue to have access to health care. Yet I think I share most Iowans' values in believing that state-run health care is the wrong direction for us to go. Every Iowan, whether rural or urban, deserves access to world-class, privately offered medicine. As governor, that would be my priority, is to extend that, to make sure that every Iowan has access to that. It's an access issue. Now, what we've done in expanding who is covered, it's the wrong approach. Inviting more people in is the right thing to do, but how we do it has to be done in a fiscally sound way.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for being here today, and thank you all for coming to our July forum. We are out of time. On your seats, you'll find a card which will show the air dates of this program. You can also catch it on the MediaCom On Demand station. And thank you once again. Let's give them all a round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.